But the line that comes up on the west there is west of
the spur line.
The spur line.
That one's not our problem because they have one or two trains a day.
So it's not gonna go over that, it's gonna come down below that and then have to go through there.
Is Elisa on?
Yep, see, you got it.
Well.
Hello, Elisa.
Clear as mud.
Well, still seems.
Right now.
Yeah.
Hello.
It still seems a little bit, not complete. How's it going? But I guess they only want one.
I did start 3:40.
It'll only block that one, it won't block Center Street.
I've got 601. The phone's the official.
601.
And it's because there are so many trains on the main line and there's maybe one a day on the spur line.
Like this all the time.
Yeah, so that you can get across anywhere.
Well, sometimes the spur line down here on Center Street is terrible too. Because they're going back and forth on it, and that one over there is the same way.
It's terrible, so the one over there isn't really as bad, this one's really, really bad comparison.
Do the induction space.
But there's no way to come the proximity of I-15, those are all tracks you can't do anything. So that's the other point, is since we can't fix it here, it's even more.
Are we recording also? We're ready to go.
Okay, let's get started. Like to welcome everyone out to the city council work session of July 19th, 2022. First item, well, let me just say, council member Van Langenveld is on Zoom. And council member Baskin is hopefully traveling somewhere really fun. First item is some staff introductions to the council, and we'll turn over to Dave Franson. David Franson.
Awesome, appreciate it, guys. Just wanted to introduce you guys to our three of our new employees. I think we've done real well. Start with, let's see, we've got Riley here. We got Riley, he's a water operator one. He started in September of last year. He's been a great addition. Everybody loves him. He's always happy, friendly, go lucky guy. He's been just awesome for our culture in that aspect. He has a girlfriend, what, 4 years-ish?
Yeah, four years.
Casey. Yeah, Casey. Loves to camp, hunt, fish. Just bought some property in Manila. He's a big sports guy. He likes to play softball, go to concerts.
The Philippines?
I wish.
No. Maybe. But he's been a great pickup for us. Like I said, he grew up in this area, and he came to us. He worked at Leaf Filter before coming here. So, welcome Riley. That's the first one. So Jordan Flynn right here is our second guy. Also a water operator one. He grew up in Beaver County, went to Roy High School. Has a little girl, Everly, but she's two.
Yeah.
Likes camping, he's a good basketball player, and I think he's kind of been one of our cool success stories too, in the fact that he was a seasonal for us. And he took a job, we have an opening here, he ended up taking a job in Ogden. They helped train him up a little bit, and then we stole him back, so that was awesome for us. We were happy to get him back here in April. He's done amazing, he's been awesome. He's really skilled, he's already got his distribution for and his backflow certification. So, everybody, that's Jordan Flynn.
Jordan was very helpful at the Liberty Fest. I asked him if he wanted to join the Youth City Council, and he's like, I'm a grown-up.
Go for it, man.
So maybe give him a raise.
Keep that in mind. All right, and last but not least, we got Jake, who's hiding in the corner over there. He's got his beautiful locks to make me jealous here. He's our mechanic one. He started in April also this year. He's barely got married to his longtime girlfriend, as I first say, JC. You got your cruise is coming up in like just a couple weeks, isn't it?
Next week.
Next? Yeah. How would it be? So, grew up in Idaho in this area. Likes riding. He's got a motorcycle. Likes music. He came to us really highly recommended through Davis Tech, their mechanic program. And he's been a great addition to our team already. Spends a lot of time up at the golf course already, and just a really skilled guy. and a hell of a Jenga player too.
That's that sounds quite right when you said he spends a lot of time up at the golf course.
Oh,
fixing stuff.
Yeah, fixing his golf swing. Yeah,
he could go off on real adjustments and all the cool work that they do.
It's impossible to fix your swing.
We kind of knew what you meant, but I'm not sure everybody in the room did.
So, the record. Anyway, we're really happy with these three hires. They've been excellent employees so far, and I'm glad you guys can put a face with them. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
I'm in Alaska, so I didn't know if I had to look for you as I
meet you for breakfast on the cruise. On your honeymoon.
All right. Well, welcome all.
It's great to meet all three of you.
Thank you.
If you haven't caught on yet, this is the best city in the whole country to work for. It works. Lots of great people. Next item, we're going to get an update from Horrocks Engineering on the grade separation project for 1100 North Bridge.
Thanks, you guys.
And you. We're ready to be dazzled.
Dazzled?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that I have dazzle in my description, but I'll do my best.
It's in the contract.
We should introduce you, who you are, too.
No,
so, that's okay. My name is Corey Cole. I'm with Horrocks Engineering. Thank you for sharing your wheel trip. I'm with Horrocks Engineers. We've been fortunate enough to be able to work with the city on a project on 1100 North.
Why don't you introduce your whole team here?
And with me is Kathy Wickham. Kathy, honestly, she's the one that does all the work. She keeps me out of trouble. Anything good is Kathy's credit. Anything goes bad, you can throw darts at me.
We will.
But yeah, we appreciate being here and appreciate the opportunity, us members, Mayor, again, the chance to present an update on where things, I guess, have been, with our history, and then where we are today, and where we're hoping to go.
We also invited Craig and Ryan Peterson, who some of you know is the city's lobbying group, and they've helped us enormously on this project as well. Getting it funded, and we're very appreciative of that. So,
one bite at a time.
One bite at a time, right?
You think that's what I've learned over the years. Yeah, one bite at a time. We'll get there. So, so with that, we were kind of joking about the logo for the project that has been developed, and I think your wife helped us with this a little bit. We should help the city staff, making sure that it was appropriate, not overkill. We really didn't spend $3 million on this, I promise. I don't think we spent $10,000 on this, I'm not sure. So I hope not.
But, this is the work session. There's chairs here around the edge. Sherry?
We'll put some chairs together.
Yes. Okay, good. Yay!
Awesome.
What should I do with that?
That's what I was going to say.
They won't bite, at least not very hard.
You know, when a company bought a building I managed, and so I always say they paid $40 million for me and $1 for the building. So, you know, we'll go with that.
The compensation package reflected that way.
No, it has right.
Yeah. I'm off. A little bit of background, and some of you may recall, I think a lot of you are relatively new investors, so you were here in 2018. There was a feasibility study commissioned by the city. Horrocks Engineers actually provided that study as well as the work on that study. Again, it was completed back in 2018, and the goals there were, number one, to address the safety of these railroad crossings on 1100 North. Obviously, anybody that lives in North Salt Lake or surrounding communities is pretty familiar with that corridor, the challenges that the main line of the Pacific or MTA pose, as well as the spur line to some degree to the west. So, you know, safety concerns were at the forefront there. Emergency response, things like that, all came into play. Also, reducing congestion and been stuck behind a few of those trains, and sometimes the spur line can be worse. It's not as frequent, but it can pose a little challenge to getting where you need to go, getting to work or the dentist appointment or soccer. It's obviously a tougher one if you need to block around on those trains. And I mentioned emergency response times. That's kind of related to the safety aspect of it too. You're calling 911 from the wrong side when the train's blocking. That's can be pretty disastrous. So those are really the three project goals that we had in mind when we looked at what feasibility was. It was very high level, very much a planning study. Didn't go into a lot of details, but we looked at several concepts, mainly around bridge separation or a bridge over the main rail lines there. We screened those alternatives. Oh, we also looked at a roadway cross-section, a five-lane roadway cross-section, so two travel lanes in each direction, and then a center turn lane, and then also a three-lane scenario is part of those alternatives as well. Ultimately, we ended up with a preferred alternative.
Wendy?
Good day.
Didn't work.
Didn't have the...
Nope, that'll work. I'll just sit here. So at the end of the study, we worked closely with the city and came up with a preferred alternative. Essentially, like I said before, it was a bridge over the UPRR and the UTA tracks, those mainline tracks. It also had a component where Main Street was realigned. And the reason for that had to do with the grades and being able to move far enough west so that by the time you came down off that bridge, you were in elevation, you could actually tie Main Street in without a lot of additional impacts. We looked at an alternative that would realign the spur line that runs into the SIM materials. Here's the supplier there on the southwest side of the spur there, the industrial lead. The way they put their trains together or back those in and offload cars or load cars from the facility, a lot of times you're just stacking across 1100 North. And because it comes in, I'll go into a little more detail here in a second. But because the way it comes in, it stacks directly across to the north. So we looked at an option to maybe realign that spur line and bring it to the south. So from the SAM yard there to the south. So that hopefully trains would stack to the south rather than across the line to the north. If there are some real, I guess, operational challenges with the oil company there. And so I don't know that that's going to have a lot of merit. And as we're finding out, it may be too close to that intersection with 1100 North. It wouldn't make a lot of difference anyway. But it was something that was considered. And we may still have some merit as we move forward. And then we wanted to have active transportation elements, making sure that there's a connection between the east side of North Salt Lake to the west side and all the way out to the ultimately Legacy Highway. Trails out that way, so those are really important components. Just real quick, so as I mentioned, you know, we looked at the elevated bridge across this, in the right place, across the UP main lines and UTA. Came down here, and as we were looking at trying to tie Main Street in, we realized that we were on a fairly steep grade coming down here. And so in order to make sure that our intersection wasn't coming in at a really bad angle, we looked at moving Main Street and realigning that so that it was a little flatter down here and something that would tie in and still meet standards. Mm-hmm. Along with that, what it means is because it's so close to the crossing here, we'd have to coordinate the signalized future signalized intersection with the railroad arms or the crossing lines there. So it works as a coordinated signal system, if you will. Trains obviously get the precedence, so when they're coming, lights are all red, and everybody stops for the train. And this is the spur I talked about.
3 months, well, not for him.
They bring trains in, they pull them up, they'll offload a car, push it in, drop it off, hook it back up, and take off in whatever direction they're going. And we were thinking that if there was a way that you could take a spur line and run it from maybe right to here, you know, this way, all of the dropping off of the cars and the building of the trains could happen down on this end rather than back to the roadway here. Still, again, it may have some up, but it looks like it's going to be so close that the activation of the signal systems on the rail line would be impacted still, so that may not be something that could be carried forward. This is kind of a 3D version of what we put together in the study, just kind of giving a sense of how things play. And you can see the railroad bridge up here, top here, coming back down, tying in here at Main Street, the realignment of Main Street, and then tying back in before we get to the East Cross Industrial Road right there. So we have entered into a contract with North Salt Lake City to take the preferred alternative from the feasibility study and turn that into a project. We're currently looking at environmental studies involved. We finished up most of the field work, so the assessments where they go out and gather all of the information on socioeconomics, historical buildings, potential wetlands, and wetlands one. Threatening endangered species, I don't think we have to worry about that. They're kind of getting all the field work, so that's kind of a generic workload that we've undertaken, so it can fit in if we decided to change directions on the type of environmental document. And then we kind of stop at that point, but we're still looking to make sure that we're going along the right path with what we call a state environmental study. So it's a study that is, that's UDOT's term for an in-house study when there's no federal money involved. And the recommendations, it's less expensive to do that. Basically, it follows the same process, but you don't have the regulatory agencies that are checking in. We do that internally with UDOT. So they have been granted authority by the federal government for the highways to give approval on those types of documents. So that's where we are today. We also started some preliminary engineering, the refinements of the alternatives, looked at some different scenarios, doing the what-if game. We've started coordination with the railroads. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
That's a fun thing to do, right?
That's a fun thing to do.
They're very helpful.
It's, yeah. I realize they have their job to do. I just wish I understood what their goal in life was. So we started, we had a kickoff meeting with them, and as you know, the railroad has a lot of regulations. They have a lot of requirements, and sometimes those requirements, they believe, extend out beyond the right-of-way. And in a sense, they kind of do, because they won't approve a permit to go over the railroad without being a lot of the criteria. So right off the bat, you know, they unloaded us. Here's what we think we need to have, and pretty onerous. Is my experience on working on other projects is that's pretty typical. I'll tell you everything in the world, this is the way it's got to be, 100%. And then as you start working through and submit concepts to them, yet they start to realize, okay, there's some flexibilities here. And it's a long process, for sure. It's frustrating at times. But one bite at a time, we get there. So, and then the other thing that we've been trying to do is coordinate with the I-15 reconstruction team. There, as most of you know, they've begun an EIS for I-15 from Salt Lake County line, or maybe a little bit south of there, up to Farmington, and the US 89 split is the ones they're looking at right now. Fairly early in that study. But we wanted to make sure that whatever they have planned for the 2600 South interchange and that the leg that goes to the west that is going to be compatible. Mainly, we're talking about the active transportation plans. trail keepers use sidewalks. Just want to make sure that our cross section is really tying into what they've projected as the new care, and our traffic study is consistent, and that we're all, you know, really doing each other's best, so to speak. This is, we wanted to show this. This is kind of, I'm going to call it crayon work, because it's sort of the brainstorming of what we've looked at with the preferred alternative that came out of the feasibility study and some of the challenges that we're going to have. Obviously, you know, maintaining access over in these areas was pretty critical, because now you're going to start elevating up in here. So we've kind of been brainstorming some of these. This is very, very preliminary. I hope nobody takes a snapshot of this and takes it home and says, this is what we're building. Because it's very, very early. But there will be some components, because obviously we need to preserve access out here. One of the things that we've been trying hard to avoid is any impacts to the trailer park over here. That is obviously, it could be a very sensitive area. It can be a very difficult area to mitigate too. A lot of times the owners in those parks are on fixed incomes. They're, you know, not in a position they can just uproot and go buy a home or, you know, be settled in. So we want to try to minimize impacts there as much as possible can. I think that's also the goal of the 15 study that they're looking at as well, to try to make sure that we can, you know, avoid that if at all possible. This is a cross section that most of it was developed during the feasibility study. So that's the other thing we're trying to do is steal everything we can from that study, so we're not recreating the wheel. But this was an elevation view showing the overpass over the rail yard. You can see the rail lines. These two are in place today. These are UP line. We'll see. Oh, sorry. These two are in place today. They are. I'm getting this.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. These are the existing two lines in place. Main line for UP. This is the front runner, UTA. And then this is a clearance window that's required for an offset for future tracks. I'm getting myself confused.
No, it's okay.
Well.
Future track you put on the
and then on this side, so one of the requirements that UTA or the UP puts on every project they build is a revision so that you don't block them from putting in a new track in the future, a future, you know, third track, if you will. So they have some requirements for the offsets for that future track, and then they have some requirements for clearance from the center of that track, and then also some maintenance area. As it turns out, their right-of-way line is right here, so we met all those requirements. Not like we have to go and purchase, extend a bridge onto property that we weren't planning to extend to. So we're fortunate in that regard. We've met all those requirements. But so this is part of a submittal package that goes into UP, so they can kind of get a feel for what is their cross section look like for the future. And they'll obviously push really hard to make sure we meet those requirements. And fortunately, those were pretty easy.
Hey, Corey?
Yes.
Quick question on that cross section. You've indicated for additional, would that accommodate what's being now funded and proposed for the double track on UTA?
So, no, not necessarily. Yes.
Because when the feasibility was done, that wasn't on the table, but now it is.
Correct. That is something that's now, this isn't necessarily an area, obviously, UTA wants to be able to double track the entire line at some point in the future. This isn't one of the priority areas.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, my answer is yes and no. I know that's probably a political answer. Political answer. I used to be a lawyer.
Well, those are the answers I understand.
The reason I say that is this is currently what they're using today is this area. We talked about the expansion of UP, pointing to that. Coming to the east, there's a pipeline easement. Some of you may be aware there's three major gas lines that run through this that will be very, very difficult to relocate or rebuild somewhere else, but probably fiscally impossible. impossible to do that. Well, I guess nothing's impossible, but it would be very expensive. So UTA does have, and those pipelines are actually over in this area. UTA does have some room, but they would have to work it out with the utility company that owns the easement through there.
Okay.
What kind of restrictions are a pipeline? I mean, could you put a railroad track over a pipeline?
No.
No, and I don't know how close you could build a pipeline because they're worried about vibration and things like that. I don't know what the requirements would be for those pipeline lines, but they're pretty substantial sometimes. I know
we're building houses right next to a pipeline, so.
Mayor, these particular pipelines have an exclusive no structure easement. It just took me about 7 months to get permission to put a 5-foot square concrete pedestal for a cantilever within their easement.
Okay.
They're very restrictive, and they serve our communities, our state, our nation, so they tend to have a lot of political backing as well. Right? You can probably attest to that if you've been in some of those conversations. So this is kind of an animated version right now of the cross section that we're going to be looking at going over the bridge. The coordination that we've done with I-15, they are planning, they call it a trail, but an 8-foot, basically a sidewalk, a wide sidewalk, to accommodate pedestrians and bikes. And so we copied that same cross section and carried it through. This is still draft. There's a big area across the bridge in this median, and we're trying to look at ways that we can at least narrow that down, if not eliminate. One of the challenges is as you go westbound over the bridge and you come down into the intersection of Main Street, you need to have a left turn there. So westbound to southbound left turn. And so if we narrow this up across the bridge, we have to open it up on the way down, and I'm not sure if we're going to have enough room, so we're just looking at opportunities to try to narrow it up. And you know, the cost of that bridge, you know, every time you can shave a couple feet off that bridge, it's a pretty good savings for the project. So we're going to look hard at optimizing that as well, still maintain that need for that left turn down.
The 11-foot lanes are smaller than they would be on the other sides of the bridge. Right.
So yes. Yeah, I think they are 12. Well, they're 12 foot today. I think they're 12 foot or wider, maybe.
I-15 are all 12.
So on 11,
I think they're
11 north. I don't think they're 12.
Yeah, I think they're wider. It's pretty unrestricted. So.
Well, we've got our engineer here. How wide are those?
So at the current intersection where we're crossing the tracks right now, we have 2 11-foot lanes. They're currently striped for 1 because we don't have the cantilever installed yet. But there's 21 feet of asphalt. So 10 and a half actually right at the pinch point. But the curb functions as part of that width, so we have 11-foot lanes.
Thank you.
So the national AASHTO standards and standards that UDOT typically use allow for an 11-foot lane. Typically, if UDOT, I say we, I worked for UDOT for a long time, so now you can start throwing the darts. I say we too often, but typically we go with a 12-foot lane just as an extra safety factor. There are occasions where financially it makes sense to narrow things down, specifically on a slower speed roadway. Eliminate some of that data if you can, especially if you can use it for a trail system or a bike lane on the shoulder. And then there are.
That's a good trade-off.
Wanted to mention that there are some shoulders through here across the bridge, but those shoulders also would act as. I don't know that we're looking at a dedicated bike lane necessarily, but they will be wide enough that they would accommodate that use as well outside of the concrete sidewalk. So, some of the challenges. During the feasibility study, you look at things at, 40,000 feet. And so you're very basic, very generic, very much, you know, planning study. We don't get into a lot of details. Some of the things that we've uncovered now, which we kind of knew, and it was mentioned in the feasibility study, this had to be looked at, are things like the coordination with the railroad and some of the requirements. One of the hints that we received from the railroad is they wanted us to look at potential of an overpass over the Woods Cross Industrial. Our feeling is that, you know, as long as that's an at-grade intersection with the rail line, that it's unsafe, and, you know, technically they're right. So we've got our work cut out to show them that the submittal that we turned in for our concept submittal, the fact that we're eliminating this at-grade crossing over the main lines, the high-speed, high-volume lines, provides significant benefits, even if we can't address the industrial area at this time. So, but they threw everything in the kitchen sink at us about what they wanted and needed, but I think that's pretty typical for that kickoff meeting. So, increasing construction costs, I don't need to mention that to anybody because it's everywhere. It's grocery store, gas pumps, everything is just going nuts, and it's been so volatile, it's hard to keep an estimate updated. It seems like we update estimates, and 2 weeks later, we find out there's a shortage of something, and prices all went up 10%. We hope that by the time this project gets developed and built, that things have stabilized well, maybe even contracted somewhat because of a little more sense of we have more supply going on. We kind of fix some of the supply chain issues that we've all experienced the last couple of years. Anticipated settlement. So this is a big one. Whenever we put a big embankment to create the bridge crossing, we're going to have settlement, especially in the areas around the very solid it's been estimated that we could have, with the embankment heights that we're looking at, we could have settlements of between 2 and 3 feet. So you can imagine what that causes challenge with all of those utilities. You have a sewer line that's relatively flat. You can't afford to settle that very much. Well, the sewer's going to work. Gas lines, the whole thing.
Trains don't like going down.
And so lots of challenges with settlement. High-risk utilities, that really kind of goes hand-in-hand with proximity of being able to build next to those, and as well as those settlement risks. We need to find a home for them somewhere, so that'll be a real challenge in terms of right-of-way impacts, which is that last note. Again, trying to balance the right-of-way impacts with getting what we need on that road. We need to narrow everything down to something that really isn't real functional and avoid those impacts, but obviously that's not, doesn't make a lot of sense. So that'll be another challenge to balance. So our next steps, and we're underway, we have our environmental study, as I mentioned, that, again, we focused mainly on the field work rather than writing a document at this point, to the point where we could, I think we're ready to start developing that document now, at least a draft. We're positioning ourselves to submit, so back up a little bit. Union Pacific, whenever you go over their right-of-way, even if it's up in the air, you're not touching their rails or their property, they require technical submittals to be reviewed through their company, and they use a consultant to do that. So they have us submit a concept level, which again is mostly that elevation view that I showed you where the tracks run underneath the bridge. Then they have a 30% submittal, which is, it's in my terms of a highway project, probably more like a 10% level of design. And then they have 100% submittal where you've got the full design, and they have these no-go gates at each one of those. So they have to approve those before they'll allow you to submit the next level. And then ultimately, once they've approved the 100% plan, then you get to start looking at the that usually takes another year to have that agreement once we've all been here. Years and right away and everything else that they got through. So we're in the process of starting the concept. So what that's going to do is it's going to allow us to get an affirmative written response to our project. So they can come in and they can say, well, these are the things we absolutely have to have. We have to do this. And then they'll have some comments saying, we'd sure like it if you could do this. And so, it's kind of this dance back and forth where you're trying to figure out what can you accommodate, what is just fiscally out of reason. And so our goal is to get that concept submittal in August, so in about a month. Get that submitted, and then there's about a six-week review period that they look at it and get their response back to the owners of North Salt Lake City. And at that point, we understand the rules of the game a lot more and what they're willing to have show flexibility on, what we're going to have to fight for, and things like that. We also plan to do some stakeholder engagement and public involvement. We've done a little bit of that in developing the project logo and things that we want to make available for city website and the update projects and newsletters and things like that, just something that kind of has a brand to it so people recognize it. And then refining alternatives to where we can start to really go hard on a final design. So that's kind of where we are today. Questions that it's always hard to speak after a meal.
Great. On our parallel track to let the council members know, we're going to be looking subtly perhaps at a number of options of how this can be possibly funded. This is, I guess I'll go back when we very first started discussing this project back with my friend Barry Edwards. The original estimates were like $13, $14 million for the whole project. That isn't even remotely close, and never was, with all due respect. And so we'll be working with all of the necessary players. Your elected state representatives. We'll be working with through Corey and their team, and UDOT and UTA and everybody else to try and identify every pathway. We want to be careful that we're not discussing all of the options that we're going to be looking at this point in time, but we've been doing this a long time and we can get relatively creative. We want to be careful on how creative we get, but we are be looking to working with some of your staff and obviously with Corey and his team at Horrox to get the best prices, get the best opportunity, and then see just how this project really fits in to meet local, regional, and state needs. And depending on where it ultimately falls on that spectrum, will give us a lot of direction as to exactly how we're going to ultimately put the funding together. But I think it's always true when as you can move through a project, the more you can have on the table, the more it begins to look like a project, the more it begins to answer the questions that people are going to answer, whether it be a UDOT or other places, the better we are. And so I think it's still very wise to continue to move forward. We know there are going to be additional concerns, and just let you folks know we are in regular contact with the Horrox team and what they're finding and what they're learning and adjusting our, if you will, our political work, financial work, to meet up to that.
I recognize that a lot of these things were put in place 200 years ago with the railroads, but it just seems like to me that we are coming forward to them and solving a problem that they're constantly in violation of the law.
Yeah.
And at the very least, they should green light us and maybe even come in and say, how can we help financially? I mean, how's that for pie in the sky? But I would think that they'd be like, well, thank you so much, because we are always violating the law there. We recognize we're blocking roadways that we have no business to block over a long period of time. And so how can we help you expedite this whole process, you know?
As Corey knows, UDOT, maybe many of you don't know, your tax dollars, UDOT dollars, actually have a full-time staff on the UP's payroll that we pay for, with the idea that that's going to help expedite. I've worked on projects where I've had to go across the UP railroads that have been, by their own admission, by the time you get to that final 100% submission, it goes back and forth and back and forth. I've had them take as long as 3 years before we finally got all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. But Mayor, I couldn't agree with you more. This, we always rely on the basis that most entities, individuals, entities, do what's in their best interest. There are times that I wonder whether UP does what's in their best interest. We went through, very candidly, part of the way we funded this was when the state repealed the Union Pacific Railroad's diesel fuel tax credit. So we didn't make a lot of friends with the UP at that point in time, as a state, as you might guess, but we benefited by that, because that's where a good portion of that appropriation came from. And giving you a little bit of inside baseball right now, but that's what we did. We tacked onto that project. Brigham City got a bunch of money for the project. We firmly believe, and I hope this is said appropriately, but that they've made a cost estimate that we don't believe they can build the project for. We think they're going to be a lot closer to what we're going to have to. So they may have built themselves in a bit of a box, and ultimately, again, I want to be a little careful, but the money's there, and they're going to have to demonstrate that they can finish their project before they're going to get all the money. And I think we're going to demonstrate well before they are, because we've got the right team at the table before they're going to get. So we'll see. Like I said, all options we're keeping open. Some of those are more political than they are fiscal, but they are. And we'd be glad to answer any questions you guys have got as what we're doing on kind of on the political end.
I may have mentioned this to the council previously, but UDOT Region 1 has assigned a project manager to our project, to this project that Mark is working on. And so we've had lots of UDOT support from Region 1 staff. The project manager is, her name is Tiffany Pocock, and she's the same project manager that's doing the I-15 rebuild that Corey mentioned earlier. So she has a lot of familiarity. They've been very supportive. They meet with us anytime we want to meet, they're there. And so there's a lot of moving parts.
And we do meet with Region 1.
We meet with Region 1 regularly
on this and other projects. So we keep our fingers on the pulse, so we kind of get
Where
they're going. And
yeah, it's a complex project, and I think the funding is going to be complicated. But I just wanted the council to know that I haven't run into anybody yet who thinks this project isn't worth trying and isn't worth doing. And people have a lot of familiarity with this problem, and so that's good for us.
Absolutely, Ken.
I'm trying to get a sense from Corey and your team and Ken, what's the level of optimism on the major obstacles, which I think are the UP approval and the funding? Am I missing a major obstacle category? But anyway, if those are it, what's the level of optimism that we will be able to work out both of those? I'm just trying to get a sense, because part of me thinks, it listens to it and it sounds like, yeah, it's more a matter of when and how much. And then I hear other things that make it sound like, well, I don't know, this may go south. So I just am trying to get a sense.
We've built a lot of these projects across the state. Not we, but the state of Utah communities have built a lot of these projects across the state, and they're always a challenge. And so going in, you know right up front it's going to be a challenge. One that's a little bit unique with this is the industrial lead to the west of the mainland there.
So let's show you this. So when we say industrial lead, this is the rail line that's the Rhodes Cross Industrial Lead. This is the main line where the bridge is. But this is another set of tracks that's west of the bridge.
But ends up being a trail because they abandoned the north part of it.
So it's somewhere down the road.
We ride our bikes on that rail line now on the north. You know, we went up there.
Yeah.
That was the same line, but they to the north, they decided they didn't need it and they gave it up. But this part, they're still servicing some industrial places to the south.
And they're servicing the refineries there too, so they're probably going to be pretty long standing.
But to put a finer point on the problem though, and this isn't the only problem, but UP was very concerned that this bridge, where it comes down and has this new intersection with Main Street, is very close to the lead. It violates their minimum distance requirement. So I'll let you answer the question about what's your optimism.
I mean, it's a project. It'll cost money to get through the railroad, but it's a project. It's a great project. I think everybody agrees. Just like Craig said, it's amazing what we're going to be able to do when we get that crossing, or eliminate that crossing. It's UP's goal to eliminate all at-grade crossings. And so the pushback we got initially is, well, if you're going to do that, you need to do this one.
A new station alert has arrived.
Sorry.
and so I'm optimistic it gets built. Is it 3 years? Is it 6 years? You know, it could take a long time, and working through the railroad is a process. But it's all about having a good plan, a good project ready to go, and then being able to incorporate the funding for it. Now, just order of magnitude, the project we're looking at now in the feasibility study was about a $50 million project. If we had to carry a bridge all the way over this to span it, it about doubles. So, you know, that's where we've got to come to terms with the railroad. And you limited experience with the railroad with that first, but the railroad typically comes to terms and says, okay, well, we'll be, you know, there's some horse trading that goes on, and I think it'll get permanent.
From our perspective, I think what we're ultimately going to look for that will be, How does this particular project function as part of an overall system? Is it just simply as is viewed when we first started this those few years ago, as you want UDOT to come in and pay for a local road? This doesn't function. No one around this table believes that this functions as a local road. It connects industrial, it connects a major state road, it connects the major state road, the Veterans Memorial Highway, I-15, it connects them and brings together. There is no north-south or east-west connection in North Salt Lake right now. And the only thing next, you've got a Woods Cross on 4th North, or 5th South. If you think this is an expensive project, that one would probably be double this one because of the expanse. So at some point in time, you have to look at what is reasonable, how does it function overall in the state system, both locally, regionally, and state, and is it classified properly? When they get through with their study, when I-15 gets through with their study, we hope to see that there's a nexus between them, again, carefully stated, without predetermining the outcomes in either document. We have to be careful on that. We can't predetermine what the outcomes are, but as we look at how everything relates, that will give us a lot better answer as to how positive we can be on getting the long-term funding. As it goes, simple example, I-15, Utah County, North Utah County, when we started working on that project, we were told absolutely no hope whatsoever of ever getting that project done. It was just way too expensive. We're all driving on it now. It started out as a $75 million bridge overpass. It ended up being close to a $400 million complete I-15 reconstruction, which is what was the right project, because they got all the information. So Corey's work, the work that UDOT's doing, the coordination, logical coordination with Tiffany as the PM for UDOT, all of this is in our favor. So if I had to give it on a scale of 1 to 10, probably not, we're probably, I'm gonna say a 6.
I think we're all proceeding on the assumption it's going to happen.
We have
That's
to.
That's fine, yeah. I've had discussions with some of the congressional members, Chris Stewart and Blake Moore. They've both been stuck behind trains on 1100 North. They were very aware of the situation.
So That's we need funny. The others to visit too, and or yeah. at the right times?
Time it.
They may have too, I just haven't.
Schedule a precision meeting time.
Yeah. Years ago, when we were just redoing the I-15 down in Utah County, the I-15 project, at the time we invited Governor Leavitt to come down to Utah Valley University to receive a very special award. It was no accident. We timed his arrival at the same time BYU was having a football game on a Saturday and three or four other major activities. He was over an hour late getting to his own award ceremony. The project was funded rather quickly thereafter. So we just need to get the right people on board.
All right.
So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. It does. Thank you.
Any other questions anyone has? Well, thank you so much, Corey, and your team, and onward and upward.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And with Ken, we're working on a couple other projects for the city, but we'll let Ken discuss those. And if there's no other questions, we'll follow Corey out the door.
Okay.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Council.
I would just go back to edit. So I'm not really, I think he hit record instead of play from beginning. So you have to go to the slideshow. We have to go to the slideshow because you were in record. You were in, the, go back to the edit again. Instead of, now up there you're on the record tab, it says slideshow tab.
Oh, yeah,
at the top of the PowerPoint. You got to change that.
None of the boxes, the words at the top.
Up there, yeah. There you go.
We're moving forward.
Where'd the council go?
They're throwing away their garbage.
This is going to be a way exciting discussion.
Yeah.
Speaking about getting to the west side.
Yeah, I go around every morning. And then sometimes I'm like, do I take the risk of getting off on Center Street? And I'm like, no, just go around.
If you're feeling brave.
That's right. Dallas says he wants 10 more minutes of
I'm like,
the truck. So
at lunchtime, it's like, that's
I
a break, baby.
I'm hoping there'll be a train.
She could take a little nap.
That's right. It's like,
sorry, guys, I'm late.
My guys
have
said
three
chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, we have 1 second. I just want to make sure this sign and she has been signed in.
Yeah, I think it has been. So
yeah, it went over the server. Thanks.
The Book of Life, what your name in
there. Oh, Zach didn't sign anything.
Make sure you're
dealing with it. Gosh, Zach, come on.
You know me, I don't like signing anything.
So what, any witnesses?
No records.
I'm just not
that
important.
Don't know where I am or what I'm doing. And Elisa did say if she had a question, she'd put it in the chat. So
okay.
I'm watching that.
We'll ignore it, mostly.
Seems how she's off having fun.
No, that's
Well, Lisa maybe too.
Yeah, it's true, we don't know.
Well, she's in Mexico, so I hope she's having fun. Because what's the point of going on vacation if you didn't have any fun?
Where's Lisa?
On vacation, that's all I know.
She told me she wouldn't be here, but she didn't say why.
She might be Bear Lake.
Oh, she goes to Bear Lake a lot because she's kind of a Logan person.
They have a cabin.
You can't be kind of a Logan person, you are.
She is.
Maybe while we're waiting, I should just update the council, and this is pertinent to Cross E. So I work for Hamilton Partners, and we were in negotiations to purchase Misty River for the purpose of creating an industrial park. And I indicated to them that that we may be favorable in that sense to an annexation as opposed to how we were unfavorable, but undecided. Anyway, they got into some pretty serious discussions with Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City was very interested in annexing them in. Anyway, the money fell apart yesterday and we withdrew the offer, so that's gone. I don't know. So with that caveat, Salt Lake City may still be, if you can live long enough.
Yeah. I mean. So kind of where we stand, I mean, Zach will give the details on the technical stuff.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay. So I'm Heather Limon. I am one of the owners. Dallin Hinckley is my brother. And so then we own Crossy Ranch. And my siblings, we have it's called Hinckley Brothers that owns the ground. And then Dallin and I run the business.
And those people are the worst.
So for 10 years, Dallin and I have thought we could make lots of money doing what we're doing and that we would be able to eventually purchase the property from our siblings. But as things go and property increases in value, and people do love our farm and they come out in droves and they love it, but we can only charge so much for entertainment and it looks as if we can't make millions of dollars doing that and definitely not enough to purchase the property. And so as we go to satisfy our other siblings and buying that property from them, it's just we're not gonna be able to buy it from them. And so then we need to sell the property. And with Misty Rivers, we never really felt like that was going to go anywhere because a lot of people had tried. And my dad had tried even way back when as to annex into North Salt Lake and was always thinking, it kind of feels like we're part of North Salt Lake. And I don't know, right when we were beginning, actually, I think you came out with, I don't know which mayor.
Yeah, the previous mayor.
Okay, and we're kind of like, Center Street, it sort of feels like we're Center Street. And when we tell people where they are, we're like, it's North Salt Lake, basically. And the Center Street of North Salt Lake, right, is how we tell people to get to us. And actually, a funny thing, when we did our trying to get the permits from Salt Lake County to do what we're doing, one of the caveats was that we made sure that we directed people down Center Street of North Salt Lake and not along 2200 West. So I think whatever.
And we're glad to hear that because all the businesses in North Salt Lake say they're in Bountiful.
Yeah, so we're in North Salt Lake. So we've always just kind of felt like we're part of North Salt Lake. It's easier to work with. It's not as big as Salt Lake City. We have talked to Salt Lake, and yeah, I think eventually they would be willing to bring us in, but who knows how long that is. And it's just a big city. It seems harder to me. I haven't had the same response as like when I email Sherry, right? It's just a smaller entity here and it just seems a little more personal and a little bit more about like what we're...
We just like you guys more.
Yeah, we just like you more.
I understand.
And not that we're excited. We won't talk about that, though I might start crying. So not that we're necessarily excited about doing this, but we don't think there's a whole lot of options for us.
And to piggyback on Heather, so I'm Dallin Hinckley, for the record. There's just been, when Heather and I were, sort of with Dave, we were always we are going to be here forever. So if it feels like Crossy Ranch is doing a 180, it's because, honestly, the last 2 years have been kind of hell. And running an entertainment venue is in a pandemic and dealing with the drought and dealing with like the cost of fertilizer increase and dealing with the cost of seed increase and dealing with every shortage from French fries to grease, you're just like, yeah, why are we trying to farm on some crappy as salt flat clay? This is not the best use for this ground. And you can only fight the salty Jordan River so long before you're just like, okay, let's move to Idaho and farm or something. Like, so I think like Heather and I are tired, and then our siblings being like, we want out, get us our money, like we just want out of this deal, we want to go somewhere else. It's kind of like, okay, then yeah, it's not even worth it to Heather and I to try and like put another $10 or $20 million into something and move, or like do the north side of the road, or like buy out some portion and move like the barns, or buy the portion where the barns are at, because it's like there's just not enough land that we can buy at the prices that are fair market. And it's not like we can say to our siblings, well, screw you guys, we're gonna, you know, take this and become millionaires.
Yeah, I'm gonna close both you guys.
Yep, and then we'll just let Zach tell you the details. You heard our backstory.
So I'm Zach, and I've been hired by
Hinckley Brothers.
By Hinckley Brothers.
To come in and do this. And it's funny because like I actually started in the early 2000s with Brian at the board company as an intern, right? So like it's kind of funny, and so. You know, when I got hired, we sat down, and I was convinced that we were not really going to ever develop or sell the property. That was the vibe in the air. Things were going pretty good. We found a mechanism on the way that we could fund out the siblings, and it was fair. It was a good transaction. And then we kind of went through the annexation process, and what we really hoped to accomplish in the annexation process is we thought we could tie an agrarian feel that was a residential that you could have Kakrasi next to, and that we could run it all the way down to 215, right? And so the people that live there today, their lives wouldn't be altered, you'd have the same kind of living. And that's really the design direction we went in, and we thought we'd go residential. And then in the last kind of our annexation meeting, we kind of disagreed so much with the way Dave presented it. And we kind of were always just on our own, kind of tagging behind, that we were like, we gotta wait a second and come back in with a better plan that is more in our control. And that was kind of our plan, and that's why we kind of stepped back and didn't come through for annexation. And the family was trying to work out, how do you buy this? And then there was also issues with just kind of the running of Crossy. And so then when we realized we weren't trying to live, you know, Dallin's home and the operations of Crossy into the long-term development of the site, it kind of turned industrial pretty quick. And the whole time we've gone through this process, and, you know, I did Epperson and Morehouse land, where the new state prison is, where it was Northwest Q with Salt Lake City, before it was the Inland Port, where everybody agreed to the deal. And so, you know, I have a pretty good relationship with Salt Lake City. I don't have a good relationship with the airport. And so it's been nice every time we come and we talk to Sherry and we've gone through the process, we just felt like it was a good fit for the family. And especially with the utilities, we feel like it's a much closer haul for us to bring utilities and not to have to deal with all the neighbors and drive through. And honestly, further to the south, it's a different business model on how they're trying to sell the land. You know, I don't think we're not going to transact until we have a complete idea of what it is. And I think, you know, it's difficult, I think, because I think you guys want to make sure you understand what the end game for the property is. They're going to take it to kind of the end result. That doesn't mean they'll be the final developer, because they're, you know, we're not going to build millions of square feet of industrial with the family, but we will kind of control the way it exits. That being said, we thought it was a good idea to come in and just talk to you and say, if we're going industrial, whether it's Salt Lake City or North Salt Lake City, you know, you guys will bear some of the traffic and some of the things that come with that. And so we thought we'd just come in, and I really think the biggest win we could do if we actually do an industrial annexation here is, you know, we could come up with some economic development tools that will help offset some of the traffic issues, and we can kind of plan for that. And you know, you have almost 100 years of farming here that controls a fair amount of water and some of the adjacent properties. There's probably some great Salt Lake water ideas that are probably pretty helpful in the current environment. And then also, you know, as we met, there's different things we may be able to do with water with the city. And so those are high level at best, but it's the additional things where I think there's a little bit more of a benefit. So to see what Dallin said, we weren't doing a 180. We've just been kind of thoughtfully be good stewards of the land and make kind of a, I'd say, kind of their goals happen. And I feel it sounded really sad listening to it.
I try hard, you know.
No, it's like I haven't heard you guys that down, and it's kind of...
It's the summer, is 102, we've been working outside.
It tells you how much they wanted to make this work, that they're like, hey, we want to, we're going to cash out and run into the sunset, and we're sad about it, right? Because
we're riding our horses into the sunset now.
Yeah,
that's take the
four-wheeler.
Four-wheeler.
Yeah. Too much
so,
saddling.
Yeah, we thought it would be good to come talk to you guys, because the truth is, after the difficulties of the last 24 months, paying for utility studies and the work we would do to come here and get like an immediate Heisman, we wanted to have a little bit of a vibe on if we should just go to Salt Lake City or if we were welcome here. And that was more or less just, I'd say, the capacities of us as a group, right? So.
Yeah, where we go to spend our money to start.
Yeah.
And not, you know, we didn't want to waste it, so.
Well, I think if you're looking to me for some direction.
Always.
I think that's the question that I think that you want answered. And I think the city needs to answer for you is whether or not the city of Marshall Lake, if this is an annexation that's important to the city or not. And so I think we can't tell you that right now, but I think we'll study it and we'll consider it. I think we know a lot about it. I think like any... Like any complex decision, there are advantages and disadvantages to moving to annex the property or not annexing the property. And I think Sherry and I, especially together with our legal counsel, we probably need to put those things, we need to put a sharp point on those things and share that with the city council before they'll be able to make a decision. What they wish to do. So it's not that we're not, it's not that we're lukewarm. I think we just don't know right now. I think that's safe to say. We don't know how, we know how to answer the question. We're not prepared today to answer the question. But we can prepare an answer for you.
That'd be great.
So I think you guys deserve that. You've been a great partner with us and a great neighbor to us. And I personally am sad that it's not working out for you, and because I think the Crossy Ranch is a great community building part of North Salt Lake, and I would agree that it's been North Salt Lake forever. And so I'm sorry for that, that it's not working out. I know that's what you guys wanted to do, and I'm sorry it's not working out. Anyway, I think the city owes you an answer, and we'll get an answer for you. If that helps.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Any questions for them?
No. Well, I just iterate. Yeah, we're sorry to hear that it's not working out, but I guess we're not totally surprised knowing all the difficulties that we've all been through on that. So, yeah, I think that's probably, you know, what we saw coming.
So my question would be, and maybe Zach already knows the answer to this, or just because, you know. So what do we do next with North Salt? Like, you just are, we'll think about this, and then you'll kind of get back to us and say, hey, maybe go ahead and apply for annexation, or go ahead and do that.
Why don't you give us a few weeks to work with you? We may have some questions for you about the proposal. And I think to the extent that we could, without getting too detailed, I think that Sherry will probably take the lead on this, but we'll need to identify the relevant questions first. And I think when I say we have experience on these issues, it's because we've been looking at this too for a long time. But, you know, traffic, as you mentioned, utility services. And then the one thing we haven't mentioned today is just the idea that this, again, crosses county lines, which is not super easy to do. I think we'd have to go back to the county commission. because this is a different annexation. I'm not sure.
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
Let me just say, I'm the city's attorney.
Yes, Todd Goff.
I hate cross-county annexations, but a lot of the issues are mitigated when we don't have residential development there.
That's true.
It changes the game in some respect, and we haven't looked at it that way, and we need to.
And for us, it wasn't an option because we were trying to. Nobody wants an industrial building right
next to an agrarian
experience, right? So
that's absolutely true, though, that this kind of non-residential land use is a lot easier in many respects to cross county boundary lines.
And that area will be industrial. I know there's homes there, and people like no.
No, it's just the way it's
Make sure Elisa knows that benefit is one of the things we need to look at.
I think Elisa's question is
really
at the heart of this for the city council.
Yeah.
There has to be a benefit to North Salt Lake.
And we're 100% of the property from where we're starting. There's no one in between it but another person that's affected. So
We probably need to think about assessed land values and
There's a lot to look at.
That's what we put together.
There's lots of things.
That's the last project we kind of put together, and we just pulled the buildings out and laid them in. It was kind of just a high-level fit.
Great.
And water. Please talk about water. When you're looking at the stuff.
Well, again, industrial doesn't take near what residential.
Well, it
is.
Depends on what the industrial is.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, so we're bringing water shares to the table.
We could put conditions on that.
Yeah. And water shares to the table is great.
We would specify the land uses pretty early on, I think, before we get
there's a state cap, too, right?
So anyway, we have some work to do, and we're happy to put some time into that. So the elected officials can make some decisions and give you some...
In a perfect world, though, this is where you'd want to be, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think if you're looking... for a sense of our willingness to explore the question with you, it's a yes. I'm interested in exploring that with you. So I would just second that the way Ken put it, I think, is consistent with my view on it.
And same here with mine. Is willing to explore. There's no going out. Yeah. And when we say industrial, I guess I was assuming more warehouse type industrial, but that usually doesn't take a lot of water.
Well, I leased a warehouse to a food processing company, and I'm stunned at the water bills coming in.
Okay.
Wow. I think we did lockouts
when
I was an intern.
Oh. Yeah.
So going back in time.
Certainly something we need to look at.
Get a big old data
center. All right, we're way over time.
Thank you guys for coming.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, we want to make it work.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
I'm used to
I'm sad you're leaving
the RC. So then dealing with all this,
I think it's
I think it's a mixed bag for us. I think Heather's more emotionally attached, and I think that I do more of the hard labor, so I'm more like
tired.
I'm sure I'll be sad like after I've rested for a year, but right now I'm like, I'd like to not move water lines for like 6 weeks.
Oh, are you the one that moves the pipe?
Yeah, Clint, this is our farm manager, he's one of my best friends, so he's like, I just want to come and hear it. And he and I do almost all the hard labor and repairs, and it's just like, there's always something. And sometimes I'm just like, wow, in my next life, I want to own like an eighth of an acre with a tiny home on it that has like nothing to maintain.
And I'm going to downsize from a quarter acre, so I understand.
Yeah.